What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. I am and remain John Iderola, and we've got a pretty fascinating show for you. Not only some devastating news to cover, the inevitable next step in Tucker Carlson's attempt to rewrite the narrative of what the insurrection was and all of that. But we have, for the first time ever, joining us as co-host of the show, award-winning journalist, thought leader, activist, content creator, Amar Jones. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you so much for having me back as co-host.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. We had a talk a month or two ago, I believe it was. And you know what? We had a good time, and we thought, why don't we do a little bit more of that? So it's great to have you here. Where might people have come across your work before?
They may have come across our podcast, the Anti-Trans Hate Machine, or the Translash podcast. They may have come across our work in short films or in documentaries. They may have seen me on MSNBC or heard me on NPR, or you know, seen me a month ago on this show, or read my piece when I was on the cover of Time magazine a couple of years ago. So there are lots of different ways that hopefully they've come across me. Hopefully.
I'm hearing that you've been busy, so that's good. That's
yes.
Awesome. Well, very glad to have you here. We've got a lot to talk about through the course of our show. And for everyone out there, if you have any thoughts, concerns, jokes, witty comments, bits of breaking news that you want us to know about, feel free to send us comments, tweets, super chats, and all that, and we'll respond as we go. Particularly good comments give you a chance at a $100 Blue Apron gift card that we give away on each show. But with all that said, Amar, are you ready to jump into some news?
Let's do it.
Okay, we're gonna be starting off with a light, fun one, everyone. From the moment it was announced that Kevin McCarthy was going to be giving over 40,000 hours of footage from the January 6th insurrection to Fox News host Tucker Carlson, it was pretty clear what the point of all of that was going to be. This is a guy who is a known liar. This is not disputable at this point. He's being given this footage to create a narrative that denies what is indisputable, that this was a violent attack on the Capitol, an attempt to overturn the results of an election. And we're gonna show you just the first night of Tucker Carlson crafting that narrative. Before we do that though, I wanna remind you of exactly who he is, because Tucker Carlson has had the good fortune over the past couple of weeks that the fact that it came out in the Dominion versus Fox News lawsuit that he is knowingly, explicitly lying to his audience about things he thinks are BS so that they won't leave him, I feel like should be a part of this conversation. So I will remind you that as January 6th was happening, Tucker Carlson was sending messages to his producers calling Trump a demonic force and a destroyer, but he's not gonna destroy us. Meaning that if you turn against Trump, or if you are perceived to have turned against Trump, he will destroy you. But Tucker Carlson's too smart for that. He's going to avoid that by not angering Trump or his base, even though he was very explicit in his text that all of the election stuff was nonsense and leading a mob to attack the Capitol was something a demon would do. So bear that in mind as we jump into the first bit of commentary that Tucker Carlson put over selectively chosen bits of that January 6th footage.
The first thing you notice from viewing the full video record of January 6th is just how many people entered the Capitol building that day. Hundreds and hundreds of people, possibly thousands, over the course of about 2 hours. The crowd was enormous. A small percentage of them were hooligans. They committed vandalism. You've seen their pictures again and again. But the overwhelming majority weren't. They were peaceful. They were orderly and meek. These were not insurrectionists. They were sightseers. Protesters queue up in neat little lines. They give each other tours outside the speaker's office. They take cheerful selfies and they smile. They're not destroying the Capitol. They obviously revere the Capitol. They're there because they believe the election was stolen from them. They believe in the system.
I mean, that is just propaganda. An obvious refutation of what we all know to be true, what he knew in real time to be true. Remember, he is describing the mob that was rallied by a demonic force there. Those are not my words, those are his words. Weird what changes when it's a private conversation versus what he's telling his audience, who he desperately wants to keep giving him money. Amara, what do you think?
I mean, Goebbels would be proud, you know, the Nazi era propaganda minister for Hitler, you know, don't believe me, believe the lies is the essential point. And I think that because this is a story that the people on Fox News want to believe, that a lot of people will. I think what's interesting is the way in which Fox News is suffering a little bit in terms of viewership, because people are understanding that there's hypocrisy here, that, you know, like a lot of rich people do to people who aren't rich, they're making fun of them, they're belittling their audience, they despise their audience, they hate their audience, but they want to monetize their audience and use it for their own political purposes. And so, you know, I think that's what this is. And we know that Tucker Carlson is powerful. We know that Tucker Carlson is cynical, and this is a really cynical thing to do. So, I mean, it's very on brand. You know, at least he's being consistent, right? Like, he's not suddenly like telling the truth. then we wouldn't know what to do. But as long as he's doing this, I mean, it's just very much par for the course.
Yeah, it's all incredibly transparent. And why would he do anything different? I mean, this helps out the Republican Party, who is there to distract their base, to keep them cowed so that the rich and powerful will get away with murder. And his audience has, like, last month they had an opportunity to realize that Tucker Carlson fundamentally, as you say, hates them, doesn't respect them, however you want to word it. And they don't care. They like being lied to. They like being conned. Because that con is comfortable, it fits in with their worldview. And honestly, like a couple of text messages, even though they're explicitly showing that he is metaphorically spitting in all their faces, that's not gonna change their mind if years of him openly advocating for them to get COVID and die didn't change their minds. So I guess I'm not too shocked that they haven't seen through this. That said, I do wanna respond to a few of the things that he said in that. So first of all, taking a group of people, some of whom are chanting "Hang Mike Pence," who are actively trying to stop the election from being certified. Remember, they were trying to disrupt it. I mean, they were also trying to potentially kill politicians. It's easy to get distracted by that. But they were fundamentally trying to stop the certification of election. To then say they believe in the system is quaint. They're there because they believe the election has been stolen from them is true. I'll give him that. But let me ask you a follow up there, Tucker. Why do they believe that? Is it possible they believe that because they were lied to by incredibly powerful people like Donald Trump and you? Again, not just lied to, let's be clear, knowingly lied to, told election conspiracy theories that you and your producers and the execs at Fox knew were BS, but you told them it anyway so the audience wouldn't flee to Newsmax. Yes. And by the way, he is pointing out, theoretically, the link between Fox News and the insurrection, why there should be some culpability there. They helped to get people inspired to try to overturn the results of the election. And then to say that they were queuing up, they were sightseers. First of all, if you are following a violent mob through the broken windows of a building, I don't care if you walk slowly once you get in there, you know what you're a part of at that point. They were meek. And overall, I will just say, look, this is one of the easiest cons ever. He was given 40,000 hours of footage from many different cameras in many different locations. And according to his strategy, the only way that he might have to admit that this was criminal was if every frame of every camera for every minute showed criminality. And because that's obviously not going to be the case, it's pretty easy to say, well, here's a shot of someone who's not defecating on the speaker's desk. According to this logic, by the way, if any of you ever get accused of robbing a bank, all you need to do is find one of the cameras in the back that doesn't show the bank robbery, or maybe show a camera from earlier the day before you got there, or a previous visit when you clearly revered the bank, and you too can get away from any culpability for your criminal actions. It's a convenient little con that they've set up, Amara.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the idea that like they make it sound as if it was like your grandma's bridge club who had entered into, you know, entered into the Capitol just doesn't make any sense. And we know from a lot of the court cases that they had created this large mob deliberately. That is to say that the people who were, you know, former military people have been trained in commandos, were using those other people as a screen to be able to get into the building and to do what they wanted to do. So the idea that there's a separation between who they would describe as like the gingerly old grannies, you know, wanting to take a picture in front of George Washington's portrait, and sort of the armed thugs, the idea that there's a separation between these two groups of people is not actually borne out in court cases where these people have already been convicted. And so, you know, again, it is all a part of the idea of spoon feeding propaganda to people that want to believe it from a source that sees itself as a propaganda machine. And the frightening thing is that he's the top rated newscast. He's built an entire newscast in the United States of America based solely off of Christian nationalist propaganda.
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, as a fun little brief thought experiment. So if we were to ignore the fact that he is obviously intentionally operating in bad faith and doesn't really believe that anything he's saying, let's ignore that for some reason. What he would have you believe is, sure, there were hooligans. We'll return to what the hooligans did in a little bit. But that obviously can't represent the other people who went through the destroyed doors and windows. They can't be held liable for that. How dare you besmirch an entire movement that's motivated by a feeling that there's injustice because of the actions of a few hooligans? Let me ask you a question. How does he talk about the social justice protests of 2020? Does he talk about it in that sort of way where, sure, there were some people who committed some acts of violence. There were some Molotov cocktails were thrown. But obviously, there were hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people protesting over the course of months in literally dozens of cities and far more small towns. And then obviously, you cannot tar them all with the actions of a few people, right, Tucker? I have a feeling he's found a way when he talks about those protests. No, every single one of those people was an Antifa terrorist and they deserve to be locked up for the rest of their life. Now that said, oh no, continue.
No, I was going to say, no, it's a part of the propaganda, right? Because a part of, I mean, one of the things I think he's actually doing is continuing to set up the predicate for there to be violence in the United States, for there to be kind of either an insurrection or something more, more nefarious. And a part of that is making the people who are on the other side always victims, right? Always put upon, always the ones who you know, aren't violent, even if they are. And then to overstate and maximize the idea of violence in other people. And so he's doing that. And this is just a part of it. Because it's not actually, I mean, the sad thing is, right? It's not about what actually happens. It's about the story that you attach to what happens.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and what he's doing right now is just one of the last steps in a more than 2 year long process of pretending that what happened there didn't happen there. In the moment, he was very clear, this is unacceptable. It's a destroyer of worlds, a demonic force. But almost immediately, Republicans decided, oh, we haven't crossed some sort of uncrossable line. Okay, then nothing happened. It's not a problem. We don't care about it. Unless, can I get you to believe that it was Antifa, in which case it was a problem? Maybe. We'll go back and forth every once in a while, but overall, not really a problem.
The surveillance footage we reviewed shows that famous clip was a sham, edited deceptively by the January 6th committee. The clip was propaganda, not evidence. The actual videotape shows that Hawley was one of many lawmakers being ushered out of the building by Capitol Hill police officers. And in fact, Hawley was at the back of the pack. The coward tape was a lie, one of many from the January 6th committee.
That is one of the most amazing attempts at propaganda that I think I've ever seen on American corporate media. So the coward tape is the tape that was played during the January 6th hearings of Josh Hawley running as fast as he can to get away from the mob that had attacked the Capitol. And that apparently hurt Tucker's feelings because he has to try to refute it. And he does that by just saying it was a lie over and over and over again. But I would ask you a question. Is that what he actually proved? Is that what he demonstrated? First of all, he says it's a lie because it wasn't just Hawley running away. It was a lot of lawmakers running away. Let me ask you a question. When it was presented before the January 6th committee, did anyone say or even imply that this should be embarrassing for Hawley because he's the only person that's running away? Nobody said that. We said that Hawley, who was all fist in the air, super strong beforehand, was running for his life. He still was running for his life. And I love that Tucker thinks that because he was in the back of the pack, he's pitching that as he's brave because he's taking up the rear. Dude was slower than the rest of the people running. I don't find that to be impressive or laudable at that point. And let me also say that if your overall point, which it is for Tucker, is that none of them should have been afraid, you're undercutting your point a little bit when you point out that not only was Josh Hawley afraid, but all of them were running for their life from the people who were apparently just taking selfies and all of that. So again, what he actually shows in this video does not prove his thesis at all. The issue is that he's showing it to his audience who just desperately wants to believe that simultaneously nothing bad was happening, but I guess also I need to believe that all of them were running away, but Hawley was last, so I guess he's brave, even though he was again running from the vicious mob that was calling for their blood. So again, Amara, for his audience, there's a lot of mental gymnastics that need to be done for this, but I'm sure that they will in the end agree with Tucker that the video, which again shows him running for his life, was somehow a lie.
Yeah, I mean, they'll believe whatever they want to believe, right? And he knows what his audience wants to believe, and he's going to give it to them. I mean, I personally though was impressed with Josh Hawley's running form. I thought it was quite good. I don't know. Do we know? Is he an athlete or something? I was like, you know, his back is straight. And his, you know, legs are out in front of him in a good stride. Yeah,
I mean, it was the core tight.
Quite impressive. Quite impressive.
100%. So here is where things are going to turn a little bit dark. We had a little bit of fun with the coward video and everything, but that very meek mob of tourists, okay, they revere the Capitol. They're not doing anything bad, despite him repeatedly showing the footage of them doing really bad things. Can I throw out a few inconvenient facts about that, as Amara has said, a bridge group of your grandmas who are just trying to take photos with the paintings and all that? Does anyone remember 4 people in the crowd died? Those very meek, orderly tourists, 4 people died. And I'm going to point this out in case maybe you haven't been on these tours before or whatever. That's not normally what happens when you tour the Capitol, that 4 people die in the crowd. And by the way, only one of them, Ashley Babbitt, was shot by a Capitol police officer as they were trying to break through the barricade to get to. There are security officers with drawn guns, and the crowd is so bloodthirsty that they're trying to get at the people pointing guns at them. Again, very, very meek people. Kevin Grierson died of a heart attack. Roseanne Boyland appeared to have been crushed in a stampede of fellow meek rioters. Benjamin Phillips died of a stroke. He was the founder of a pro-Trump website called Trumparoo. But everything was so meek and orderly that people were having strokes and heart attacks all over the place. Of course, you also have 5 police officers who died in the weeks and months following it. Brian Sicknick was attacked by the mob. He died. Jeffrey Smith killed himself after the attack because it was so traumatic what he went through. Howard Liebengood as well. 150 police officers, who Republicans occasionally like to pretend that they back in some fashion, were injured, had to be hospitalized. Hundreds of workers at the Capitol were also attacked or traumatized by the mob. The mob, who was just, they were just, you know, tourists. They were just meek tourists queuing up for selfies and maybe beating into the hospital dozens and dozens of cops. Again, Amara, we've talked about their willingness to believe what they want to believe, but they would say, if you ask them, do you back cops? They'd say, of course I back cops. And I will conveniently ignore the deaths of these cops, the deaths of these protesters, the hospitalizations of the workers and cops, if that's what it takes to believe that January 6th wasn't a big deal.
Well, they only support the cops that they believe are on their side. So, the cops who aren't on their side, they don't believe. So, again, it's everything that we're talking about. Again, at least they're consistent. At least they're consistent.
Yeah, 100%. I just want to point out one or two other things really fast. Just a real fast fact check. Why are we fact checking? That's a very good question to ask. It's pointless. It's not going to have any effect. But Ryan Riley pointed out, Tucker said at one point, to this day, there is dispute over how Chansley, he was the QAnon shaman, got into the Capitol building. Tucker had literally already shown footage of Chansley following a crowd through the broken in doors. So again, like he's not even doing a good job of selective editing to make his lies seem believable. He's just showing it and then pretending he didn't already show it. But with that said, all of this, whether it's intended or not, is in service of Donald Trump. And by the way, even the challengers to Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, they all have to pretend that January 6th wasn't a big issue, because again, this isn't just about not offending Trump, it's about not offending his base, all of whom believe that January 6th was like the best thing ever. I want to give you some of his response to this amazing bit of PR that's being performed by Kevin McCarthy and Tucker Carlson. Trump bleated, "Congratulations to Tucker Carlson on one of the biggest scoops as a reporter in US history." That is how he is pitching this naked propaganda. A scoop. He got footage and he's claiming that there was no violence, even though it shows tons of vicious, murderous violence. It's a great scoop. He should get the Pulitzer. He points out that this sheds an entirely different light on what actually happened. Well, that is the goal of it, I will agree. Pelosi and McConnell failed on security. Again, I love that they have to attack like Pelosi and McConnell failing on security when all of the rest of the time they're saying there was no need for security. It was just a meek group of tourists. What do you need security for then, Trump, if they're so great? He calls for literally all of the people locked up from January 6th to be let go, including the ones who beat people to death. And he commends Kevin McCarthy's great courage in giving this footage to a propagandist on Fox News. He says that the people from the select committee should be prosecuted for their actions. So not only are they going to rewrite what happened on January 6th, but those who actually shed some light on what happened should literally be prosecuted and sent to prison for what they did, Amara. It is just amazing. Like, it's happening in real time, but it sure does reek of certain periods of history in other countries. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think, Rachel Maddow actually had a good point last night. And, you know, I said the same thing recently on another program, which is that if this were happening in another country, maybe we would see it better. And I constantly point to the fact that, you know, the way in which Lula, Inácio da Silva, the new president of Brazil, dealt with his insurgency, which was sponsored by our insurgency with many of the same people in both, because Christian nationalists like to, you know, form alliances across borders. The way in which he immediately jailed hundreds of people, they didn't get to go home. They didn't get to be plucked out one by one. Hundreds of people went to jail immediately. There was a crackdown on them immediately. The governor of an entire state was forced to resign because he didn't provide security. There's no one who's been held accountable, for example, for the lack of response from the National Guard here. So I think the fact, and we've seen that when there's an appropriate state response to emerging fascism, fascism gets stronger. And that's the danger here. And I think that one of the major things that we can learn about Brazil is the fact that, you know, Lula had lived through a military dictatorship. He knows what those people are. He knows the extremes to which they'll go. And so he moves with urgency. in the United States, where there is a false sense of security about our democracy and what we can and cannot do and the rules that we have to play by, there's this detachment from the reality of fascism, of authoritarianism, that is allowing us to be slower and allowing this to get larger and to thrive and to become even more dangerous.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. With that said, we are going to take the first break of our show. When we come back, the obvious next step in the anti-trans game that they were playing at CPAC of calling for the eradication of millions of people. But no, I didn't say it about people. I said it about a thing. That is ongoing, and we're going to respond after this.
So the ideology leads to the castration of children, and therefore it's bad. It is a cancer on the country. Of course, that's true. But for the crime of saying so, the Daily Beast, which is an obedient servant of the people in power, big defender of castrating children, accused the man you just saw, Michael Knowles, of calling for genocide. And we're quoting, Knowles says transgender community must be eradicated. After Knowles and the Daily Wire threatened to sue, the Daily Beast corrected their headline. But of course, he'd already accused the man of pushing genocide.
They did that because that's what he's doing. That's what he's intentionally doing so that he can get more cred on the right, so he can be brought on Tucker Carlson, so they can then play their little game where, no, I didn't say it about transgender people. I just said it about transgenderism, this thing that we've made up that we can rhetorically attack and pretend that we're not trying to drive people into the shadows or inspire our followers to follow them around the country, beating them and in some cases killing them. This game is so see-through at every single step. This little game they play where they added an ism to a word and now they can get away with calling for millions of people to either be legally barred from society or wiped out entirely. Mara, I hate even having to cover this because it's so terrible, but I know you've been talking a lot about this recently, including on MSNBC. What do you think about this little fun game they're playing?
It's not fun. And that's one part of it. It's very dangerous. I just want to start out by refuting this factually. As you say, facts don't matter, but castration of children doesn't happen. What they would label as castration of children would be, you know, beginning to engage. I don't know how they describe it, but in any event, there are no major interventions for anyone until the age of 18. So this, whatever they're talking about is totally made up on their side. Like, there's no factual basis for that. It's not in line with the medical guidance for how you treat trans kids. It's not in line with the overwhelming choices of families. Like, it's just made up. It's just conjured up. And it's conjured up to create the basis, a predicate for more violence and targeting of our community. And that's where this whole thing of transgenderism comes in. We have seen this playbook before. There is not any example of fascism targeting a group of people anywhere in the world, or an authoritarian regime targeting people anywhere in the world, where they first don't label the belief system as the thing to be targeted. So once you make the belief system, whatever that is, belief system or ideology, unacceptable, then you can make the people unacceptable. Then comes the targeting and exclusion of people. So this, I keep telling people over and over that what is happening with trans people is just the road test for what they will do across the country in order to be able to maintain a white Christian nationalist majority. Which what they're doing is road testing. How can we legally exclude a group of people from the United States and persecute them and marginalize them in order for us to maintain control? And what they will learn from trans people, they will begin to apply to other groups in the country. This is a road test. And so if they're able to get away with this labeling of transgenderism, they're going to apply it to other people. If they're able to then begin to ban individual trans people, they're going to do that. And so we shouldn't be under any illusion that the smallness of us as a population allows us to be the laboratory
for the authoritarian fascist vision that they have for the rest of the country.
Yeah. I think you're 100% right that this is going to naturally expand. I mean, they're already in Iowa, they're trying to ban gay marriage again in their constitution. So they're back to that. But I also want to point out, because I've seen some cis people on Twitter are like, you know, they'll invoke that they came for blank, but then I didn't do anything. Let's also be, even if it wasn't going to expand, this needs to be fought. They don't need to come for anyone other than the trans community for this to be something that every person with a shred of empathy in their soul to fight with all of their power against. But I do agree that they are also going to come for a lot of other people.
Well, they already are. Like, I think they already are. I think that this is the thing that people don't understand. And one of the things they understand about liberals and people who are in the mainstream is that, you know, most people itemize things that happen. So they see voting rights. Oh, that's terrible. Abortion. Oh, that's terrible. Trans rights and what targeting trans people. Oh, that's terrible. But they don't understand that the way that the right wing is pushing on all those fronts, for them, it's actually a united. They see the connection between these issues, you know? They see how all of these things are linked. And so what we see, what most people see as disparate for them is actually a unified battle space to capture America for them. And like people need to get that in their brains. Like it actually is all linked. Like even if they're not coming for you, it is actually also linked to other things that are impacting you right now. So we need to be as responsive.
Yeah. And they're, you know, it's obvious, as you were sort of pointing out, the things that they say about these gender affirming care and all that is often lies, mostly intentional, also partially, they honestly don't care. There are people in media who cannot do a single show without attacking trans people, who haven't done 5 minutes of honest research or exposing themselves to trans people to learn about what it's actually like. But also, they do this little bait and switch where they're like, well, this is just about the kids. This is about the castration. They love, oh my God, do they love saying the word mutilation? Oh my God, it's their favorite word. And then they ban the care for everyone of every age. They ban
also what's sick about it is that like they're sexualizing children. I think that's wild. Yeah. Like they say that everyone else is sexualizing children. They're the ones that are talking about castrating, to use their language, 7-year-olds to 8-year-olds, that's turning a child into a sexual object. So you all actually believe that children are sexual objects. And that's what's wild to me, is that the thing that they accuse other people of doing, the thing that they accuse the QAnon conspiracy, which this is a part of, of doing, they actually do themselves. They're the ones sexualizing children. And that's what's actually revolting.
Yeah. Well, and also there's another example of that, the thing they're accusing the other side of doing. Did you catch that little comment there from Tucker Carlson where the Daily Beast are obedient servants of the people in power? Oh, Tucker, like I think this is just you having fun where you are describing exactly what you're doing. Like I don't discount that there are people on the right who legitimately have so much just vile hatred in their heart that they actually hate everyone who's different than them and want to see them driven out of public life or perhaps killed. But for someone like Tucker Carlson, who again, certainly there's hatred. His father was like rabidly anti-trans as a journalist, like never forget that. That isn't necessarily the bigger reason of why he's doing this. This is a convenient thing to get bloodthirsty conservatives distracted over for a few years so people like Tucker Carlson can make millions and millions of dollars and not pay their taxes and corporations won't have regulations. The true people in power love a distraction like this. And I call it a distraction because that's the intent. It is not just a distraction. It is a horrific attack on a community of people. But he is very much revealing himself in that. I'm also gonna say we had a bit of Michael Knowles to play here. Not actually gonna do that. Screw Michael Knowles. He's doing this thing intentionally knowing that he can call for the genocide of people. Oh, sorry, the ism. Please define for me exactly how you take transgenderism out of society without taking transgender people out. I know that you're gonna have nothing because we know exactly what game you're playing. But I also wanted to take this opportunity, Amara, because you're speaking with so much passion about this. I know you have a podcast you'd like to let people know about, and we have some images we'd love to show of that.
Yeah, so on March 31st, at the end of this month, we are going to launch season 2 of our award-winning investigative series called the anti-trans hate machine, a plot against equality, where we look at where this conversation comes from, where the people, the money, the organizations are that are driving this. And in this season, we're gonna look specifically at what you're talking about. Where does the cultural conversation about trans people and trans kids come from? Because I have to tell you, it's not natural, it's manufactured. And so we spent a year and a half unpacking the entire cultural, media, pseudoscientific landscape on the right in the Christian nationalist movement, which has driven this particular conversation that is the predicate for all of these bills. And they've just been really successful in taking these fringe ideas from the internet and moving them into the mainstream. And so what we do is tell the story of how that happened, because there is a story there.
Yeah, incredibly important to explain how these people apparently, like, they would have you believe that they only just discovered that trans people exist a couple of years ago. They believe that we are the first society and the first time to ever have anyone who identifies in any way that they're not comfortable with. It's just obvious nonsense. But everyone definitely check that out, as well as Translash Podcast with Amara Jones. Everyone, thank you for that.
I'm going to introduce legislation, Jesse, to make certain Mexican drug cartels, foreign terrorist organizations under U.S. law, and set the stage to use military force if necessary to protect America from being poisoned by things coming out of Mexico. So what would Lindsey Graham do? I would tell Mexican government, if you don't clean up your act, we're going to clean it up for you.
And at the end there, Lindsey Graham is using fun little euphemisms. We're going to clean up your act. He's talking about military strikes and perhaps a military invasion of northern Mexico. Let's be very clear about that. Let's also be clear that that is what people like Lindsey Graham were calling for just when we knew that there were Americans who had been kidnapped in Mexico. Now that we tragically find out that two of those kidnapped Americans apparently were killed, the other two have been found. That's the good news, I guess, but two died and there are injuries for those who have been found. One can only imagine what they're going to be saying now. But obviously this is a tragedy, and it's a tragedy that they are going to look to exploit to rally their base again, to attack Mexico. I want you to think about how Republicans would respond if the Mexican government was like, okay, so these opioid manufacturers in America are producing so many pills that people are ODing, so we are going to bomb their headquarters. I don't care what little silly euphemism you use that we're taking care of a problem. It's war. That's actually what it is, from this party that loves to pretend that they've turned anti-war or something. Look at them casually talking about attacking our neighbors, Amara. It's ridiculous.
I mean, authoritarianism is gonna authoritarian. You know, like, I think that, again, you know, when you are a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so when you believe that the way to deal with every single problem is by becoming muscular and militaristic marginalizing groups of people, that's what you're going to do. And, you know, the Mexicans didn't say, oh, you're putting kids in cages, we're gonna invade. Or, oh, you know, you're detaining people or you're human trafficking people, moving them from one state to another, we're going to invade. I mean, it's totally ridiculous. And I just think that, you know, there is actually no thought here. This is all gut and blood politics on their part. And that's the game that they're playing, because they know that their base eats it up. But it's totally ridiculous, and it's an absolute double standard.
When you say that there's no thought here, I'd like to demonstrate how little thought there is here. I mean, you know, you have Lindsey Graham, you have Bill Barr saying that cartels should be dealt with like ISIS. Oh, so you mean we're going to be involved in like a many years, decades long interminable war against them? But I don't doubt that that's what you'd like. But if you're talking about no thought, I'd like to go to the queen of no thought, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who says our military should be stationed at our southern border. We should strategically strike and take out the Mexican cartels, not the Mexican government or other people, but the cartels. Yeah, just, you know, random strikes in Mexican cities, and they'll only hurt the bad guys, because that's how missiles work. They're making billions, or international terrorists, blah, blah, blah. Here's my favorite line. Our military is competent and should take them out swiftly. You know, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. Just take them out swiftly. The Mexican government really should have thought of that, I think. You know, in other countries in Latin and South America that have dealt with cartels and stuff, why didn't they think of that? Just taking them out swiftly and easily. And obviously, I'm being incredibly sarcastic. But here's the fun thing about a boneheaded, smooth-brained argument like Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is making. So if we do her insane plan and start striking in cities in Mexico, it's obviously not going to take out the cartels swiftly. And then, oh no, what happens then? We get drawn into a long, you know, drawn out conflict. We have to spend a bunch of money. That's what she wants. That's what all of them want. They don't care if we do it swiftly. They want more spending on the military. Isn't it convenient when if your idea fails, the people who financially back you win? Isn't that a little bit suspicious? Again, it makes one think that perhaps these are more obedient servants of the people in power. Any final thoughts, Amara?
I mean, I think that what's interesting is that they believe in muscular militaristic responses until it comes actually time to fight and to stand up for things that they should be for. You know, the fact is that these are the same people who are saying that we shouldn't support the Ukrainians who are confronting Russia. You know, why is that? Why not? That, you know, a lot of this is about rhetoric and about posturing. It's not actually about doing. And Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't understand that the United States, you know, has been in a multi-decade war with cartels, doesn't understand what the war with cartels did to Colombian society, killing hundreds of thousands of people, ripping that society apart, and how we were a part of that. That, like, this, the response that they're saying is the response that hasn't worked. But yeah, again, this isn't about that. This is about stereotyping Mexicans and making the United States seem like the good guys. I mean, they've watched too many cartoons.
100%. Yeah. Yeah, totally. By the way, this is what they were calling for before they knew that two Americans have died. It's going to be every single one of them tonight. And it is a tragedy that people were kidnapped.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're apparently kidnapped because they were traveling to Mexico to have a medical procedure. Because again, the American healthcare system is an absolute disaster and people have to flee to more civilized countries to get these procedures done in an affordable fashion. So now two people have died, so we should obviously invade America. What were they willing to do when way, way, way more people were killed in, I'll just say, Uvalde or Marjorie Stoneman Douglas? When people were being gunned down, not across the border, but here in our own cities, what were they willing to do? Literally nothing. They didn't care. They barely even care to send thoughts and prayers tweets anymore. So isn't it a little bit convenient? It really does matter where people die and under what circumstances for how they're going to respond to it.
I'm just gonna read you the language in your bill. No classroom instruction by school personnel or third parties relating to sexual orientation or gender identity shall occur. Lady, you mentioned George Washington. Who is Martha Washington?
His wife.
Under your bill, how could you mention that in a classroom?
So to me, that's not sexual orientation.
Really?
To her, that's not sexual orientation. And I believe her. To her, that isn't. Because that's a straight person. And straight people can do whatever they want and talk about whatever they people. And that's not sexual. It only becomes sexual when it's not straight, according to these people. And we're going to have more from that, where she attempts to defend her bill, which she appears to have very little understanding of. But here's the added layer that makes this more, even more interesting for me. So this is going on in Missouri. The guy asking the questions is Phil Cristofanelli, a Republican, questioning GOP Representative Ann Kelly. So this is two Republicans arguing over this incredibly needless bill. Amara, what do you think so far?
I mean, it's all thoughtless, right? And the minute that anyone thinks, regardless of political party, about it, it doesn't make sense and you challenge it. And so I think that that's the most interesting thing to me about this, is that this is not a person who, I mean, a Republican in Missouri, that's, you know, he, that this is not, you know, Republican-like. This is a very very real Republican, and is saying this bill doesn't make any sense because you all aren't thinking about it. And you're actually causing more problems than you think that you are solving with this legislation. And it goes, it's just true across the board. I mean, the fact that, for example, one of the bills in Florida, if memory serves, wants athletes, girl athletes, to report on their menstrual cycles. And so what that means is that hetero, like girls who are not trans, so cis girls, are mm-hmm. going to have to report their menstrual cycles to the state. And yeah. do cis parents want that? I mean, is that the world that you want to live in? And that's yeah. That's what the world that these bills are creating. Like, they're creating an authoritarian infrastructure across the board, you know, saying that it's about trans people, but it's actually an authoritarian structure across the board, which people really need to pay attention to.
Yeah, 100%. By the way, people are pointing out that Phil Christovanelli apparently is one of the few Missouri state reps who's in the GOP and is gay, actually, which I didn't know. So thank you to our audience for letting us know that. But take a look. Oh, by the way, somebody, I guess, didn't read my sarcasm when I said being straight isn't sexual orientation. No, that's what they're implying. Obviously, I don't believe that, just to be clear.
Right.
But anyway, there are some follow-up questions to her about her bill. Take a look at this.
So it's only really certain sexual orientations that you want prohibited from introduction in the classroom.
Do you have language to make that better, to make it where you're not talking?
Lady, I didn't introduce your bill.
Okay.
And I didn't write it. You wrote it, and so I'm asking what it means. Which sexual orientations do you believe should be prohibited from Missouri classrooms?
We all have a moral compass. And my moral compass is compared with the Bible.
Lady, I believe during your testimony, you said that you didn't want teachers' personal beliefs entering the classroom, but it seemed a lot like your personal belief you would like to enter all Missouri classrooms.
You can believe something without putting that onto somebody by the way you behave.
That's one of the most amazing things I've seen in video right there. You can believe something without, I realize what I'm doing here. I totally want to put my thing on you. I kind of walked into a trap there. No, it just radiates from her. Come on, man. Why are you asking me this? You know what we want here. If you're straight, you can talk about it. You can talk about your relationships. You can talk about historical relationships. Like, what do I have to put in here that makes it so we get to talk about us, but we pretend that anyone who isn't us doesn't exist? That is the only wording she wants, because her moral compass compares to the Bible. I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. She means, I just do whatever the Bible says or something, and I think it means I'm supposed to hate these people. So what words do I need to put in which order that means we get to openly discriminate against these groups? That's what I read it as, Amara. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it's just the hypocrisy, right? It is that they want to be able to do whatever they want, and they want other people who they don't want to be able to do whatever they want to not be able to. And that's what it is. And that's why when you press them on the contradictions, on the ridiculousness, on the vapidness of these ideas and their laws, it just collapses, because there's actually no there. There's actually no rationale besides, well, this is what I want, and so it should be the case. And that's why they so very easily, I mean, she clearly disintegrated that. First of all, I'm really curious, because I know this from my own reporting. A lot of times, you know, these state legislators on these types of bills are fed this language. Someone from an outside group may have easily just asked her to introduce it, and she did so without thought, because it's clear that she didn't know what she was asking. It's clear she didn't know her own language in her own bill, and hadn't even thought about it. And so, you know, one of the things that's happened is that the right has built a very effective machine to get state legislators elected, so that they will be able to do whatever they want with those elected state legislators. Now, I don't know if that's the case here, but I do know that that phenomenon exists across the country, and we're seeing that play out in the way that these bills are unfolding.
I don't know for sure either. I would imagine from her testimony there, she probably had help, because she doesn't really seem all that capable operating independently. Here's an added little fun fact. She was a teacher. Isn't that fun? How was she allowing the Bible to influence her teaching there? Also, this bill that wouldn't allow you to recognize any sexual orientations except de facto straight. It's not for kindergarten. It's not for kindergarten to third grade. It's for all grades. All grades. And his example, and I'll close on this, of not being able to acknowledge that Martha Washington is the wife of George Washington, is that may seem like a ridiculous example. But remember, what they want in Florida, they kept talking about teachers mentioning that they, like if it was a female teacher, had a girlfriend or something. You can't do that. You can't literally just acknowledge that a relationship exists. It is the exact same thing as the Martha Washington. You are acknowledging that that relationship exists between Martha and George. Why is it that acknowledging that one is fine, but another one is so unacceptable that it needs to be barred with the power of the state? So anyway, that's just something for her to think about when she revises her bill, I guess. Anyway, with that said, that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you everyone on the linear platforms and listening on the podcast. There is more to come in the aftermath though. So everyone on Twitch, YouTube, the members app, all that stuff, we've got more to come, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.